ॐ मयनात्मिरन्यस्य ज्ञानार्जनशुलक्षाय चक्षुः मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यनुभोभीष्टां स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयमुपकरमायां स्वापरन्तिकाम् नम ॐ विष्णुपराय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिसिद्धान्तस्वामिनीति नाम्ने नमः विष्णुपराय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमद्भक्तिवीरान्तस्वामिनीति नाम्ने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणि प्रचारिणे निविशस्तशून्यवारि पुष्कचादेशचारिणे पञ्चकापतरूपश्च कृपसन्धुवेव च पतितनां पावेव्यो वैष्णवेव्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्रीदरेतगराधा शिवास्वदि गोभक्तवृन्दम् हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे इस्कान फाउंड चादर श्री प्रभुपाद की Divine Grace to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati to Kua Maharaj ki. Yeah. Divine Grace to Gogovinda Swami Maharaj ki. Yeah. So it's a double header today. The appearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati to Kua Maharaj and the disappearance day of his Divine Grace to Gogovinda Swami Maharaj. You see that there's constant manifestation and also a recalling. Krishna's own pastimes we see in his Guna Avatar, Leela Avatar, and his Shaktivesha incarnations, that at some point they manifest in various universes, and at other times they are withdrawn or they go on to other activities. But before they come and later after they have left, message has been given, what is necessary for helping the living entities to return back expediently has been extended. And some souls, rare souls, they get it. The Lord continually comes again and again because there are still the activities of annihilating the demons. There are still the activities of clarifying what is Dharma, what is Sanatana Dharma. There's still the activities of nescience and personalism, voidism, and there are still certain souls who somehow got some benefit, some previous lives, but didn't fulfill the complete mission of human life. And in some cases, some of those souls will go directly back due to the mercy of the Lord or His great servants, what they have now given to the planet. Some souls will get some part of that and then they will go on again lifetime after lifetime getting a little more. And then some souls will totally ignore and some will even try to attack the message as well as the messenger. So that sequence is going on and on. Some of it is of course unfortunate. We know how when Srila Prabhupada met his spiritual master in the last lifetime or last incarnation, because obviously it was not the first time he was interacting with his spiritual master. Or was it the first time that him and his spiritual master had certain things to do in a particular universe? And so we see in the Leela, when he met his Gurudev, that the message was transmitted to preach in English to fulfill a certain aspect of Mahaprabhu's mission. We know how in the Bhamavairatya Purana, you know how in the Chaitanya Mangala, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has let us understand that he was going to spread the Yuga Dharma throughout Bhartvarsa, throughout India. But there would be another who would come later who would spread it throughout the entire world. And he would be the mantra upasaka. He would be the Sini Pati Bhakta who would be like a field commander. He's on this intense mission. And so we see how Prabhupada always expressed how, if anything he did successful, it was due to the mercy of his spiritual master. And so this great work that Prabhupada has given to the world, as it has come down through Lord Chaitanya, through Lord Nityananda, it has come directly from the order of his own spiritual master. That is connected to these great personalities. When they appear this time in this world, as well we'll see as we look closer at who they are, as time unfolds, in some cases already unfolds, that we see that these personalities have eternally been associated in the spiritual world with Krishna, as Nitya Siddha, and that they appear, and they do often similar kind of things sometimes, in lifetime after lifetime. So we're all very fortunate that we have an opportunity to be somehow connected, be a part of Krishna arranging to give himself in such a deep way, a special package where we are being a part of Lord Chaitanya's great internal army or entourage. Bhaktisiddhanta also so connected with his father Bhakti Vinod, his Guru Dev, Gokushodas Babaji, and how his father instructed him to take initiation, Diksha, from Gokushodas. They're almost diametrically opposed or diametrical positions in terms of their level of involvement in spreading the Yuga Dharma. Bhaktisiddhanta was a highly astute scholar, like in the mood of Jiva Goswami. And Gokushodas, even his work before people knew him as who he is, this great sadhu, was a simple, you know, grain merchant, rather impoverished. He was illiterate, and far from being astute in any way that Bhaktisiddhanta was. But Bhaktisiddhanta was directed by his father to take shelter. And it's similar to the story of Narottam and Lokanath Goswami. How Lokanath didn't take any disciples except only Narottam, and only did he accept Narottam, he accepted him very reluctantly, extremely reluctantly, to refuse. But Narottam was so intense about getting the shelter of this great soul. And so he would just do meager service and even clean the stew area where Narottam, where Lokanath would defecate. And Lokanath was later so amazed at this genuine desire to receive mercy, to receive instructions, and to take shelter of such message coming from Krishna. That was, of course, coming to Lokanath himself. So even though he refused, that the love is always stronger. The pure love is always stronger than any bureaucracy, any order, any instruction. If the love is there, the love will come out and it will just radiate in the environment. And even where he was not having intention to have disciples, that he took this Narottam as disciple. Where he only had one disciple, Narottam, Lokanath working through Narottam, Narottam had thousands, tens of thousands of disciples. So we see the teamship, but at the same time, the heterogeneity or the variety that's there within the messengers of the Lord. People are thinking that spirituality is something that's just mundane or monotonous or homogeneous. So similar, they miss the whole point. That real variety is actually spiritual variety. But it doesn't go outside of the boundaries of what is Krishna's desire. Like Bhaktisiddhanta, he was the eternal brahmachari, a nicety brahmachari. Let's say eternal, in other lifetimes he doesn't Krishna desire. But in this lifetime, we see, recent past that he was remained brahmachari. He was quite scholarly even in school, but he left school because he could understand that if he stayed and continued, that he would be encouraged to take to grihastha life. But the nature of his mission, it did not incorporate such a lifestyle. And so he edited, was editor, wrote many things, edited so many things before, even for his own father. Was extremely austere, especially as he positioned himself for his massive effect on the world. Sometimes these great souls, they may appear ordinary, but at times when they are now ready to do their major work in the world, we'll see a certain transition happen. Usually a certain period of austerity, extreme austerity, and then an outcoming, or more of an overt presentation of, you know, their mission. So he was chanting something like 192 or 96 rounds every day, which is sort of inconceivable of how he was able to do that and write and lecture and preach and so many things. And at one point, he was living in such an austere situation that in his little hut, even though the hut was damaged and rain would come in, he did not even worry about taking time to try to get the hut repaired or repair it, but he would just have an umbrella and still go on with his bhajan, still go on with his mala, his japa, as he would just let the rain simply bounce off the umbrella and deal with the situation without much effort for his material well-being. Why is it necessary for these eternal associates of the Lord to honor austerity, to celebrate it? Why does Krishna himself, who owns everything, controls everything, who is most merciful, possesses all the opulence of Krishna through Bhagavan Swayam, why should he desire or want to see his devotees undergo austerity? Of course, not that he desires to see them inconvenience themselves in such ways. But obviously, love is not just to do whatever feels comfortable to one. But love is always something that goes beyond selfishness. It goes beyond bodily and even psychological comfort. Because those things are all based on just the material atmosphere, the duality and the temporary thing. But because love is ultimately eternal, it is the inherent part of the soul. So it is never to be restricted or stopped or checked by that which is external. And when it is, it shows the quality is not very strong. So therefore, Krishna often arranges various things to happen, even for his own devotees, as a way that their love shows as his love meets their love. Krishna often allows his devotees to assault material nature, because by such austerities, they are going against, they're counteracting material nature. They're not accepting, or they're not being controlled, and they're surely not being limited and restricted by material nature. And so there are many times we'll see them. Their lives are so extraordinary because it shows that they do not just accept the material nature, the modes of material nature. They do not accept the conditional state of things. It's not that Krishna wants to see the devotees inconvenienced. It's not that the great spiritual masters, that they want to see the devotees under certain restrictions and obligations that's just for the sake of rules and structures and adequacy, etc. But it's because of their desire to protect, because of their desire to encourage, it's because of their desire to help the person to say no to being a slave of material body. And so we see how in their own lives, even though they often have many opportunities for so many material things, that they do not become overwhelmed, and sometimes they literally run away from such things. So we should know that simplicity and austerity are an inherent part of devotional life. Now, whether Krishna arranges many things in one's life, that is up to Krishna. But still, one should always be constantly trying to be in a mood of simplicity. And usually we do that by the external as well as internal environment being similar. And we always do that by the internal environment being like that, where it is genuine, and then whatever happens to the external, it is just secondary. But normally, the external and internal have to match for most people. We see that they're great devotees of the Lord, who had great opulences, and so much involved in material energy in so many ways. Even we see some were governors and kings, like Prataputra, and we see like Ramananda Roy. But at the same time, we see that. For them, if they were those, having those or not, it didn't make a difference. If anything, they saw the externals as being more or less a disturbance. Ramananda Roy had no desire for anything other than Krishna's love. And we see on and on. But due to what their service were as their initial siddhas, Krishna arranged as a way to show us that there's many different types of devotees. But still, within certain boundaries, it's not that anything goes as a devotee. So Bhakti Siddhanta, we see that he was so powerful that literally even other sadhus and shastis, they would run from him. They would be afraid to be in his, sometimes even his physical association. What to say, to be in an environment where there was the ongoing discourse as he was very much addressing the Siddhanta in a very vigorous way. And so his touch reached out for Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada is extending that so many ways to his disciples and grand disciples. And one of those great extensions was Gogovinda, Swami Maharaj, who also was a very special entity, appearing with a very special mission at a very unusual and special time. You look at Gogovinda Maharaj's history. He so often, we think more about, especially present-day Vaishnavas after they're gone. But as our faith and understanding is strong, we will constantly see Krishna coming forth in history as well as in present, and we will anticipate him for the future. If there are times that Krishna just forgets about his devotees and doesn't have pure souls around, then it means Krishna is unfair, is cruel, is harsh. He has left those who are aspiring for him simply at the mercy of the cruel material nature. Because material world is the abode of Durga, it is the abode of deviation. It is the atmosphere to forget the Lord. So if Krishna leaves his devotees unprotected, without having the ability to be guided and blessed by those great souls who have gone on, as well as those who are with us, then something would be wrong. Krishna closed the door, and the great souls who have gone on, they cannot extend their mercy, we cannot connect with it, or he's taken them all away, and therefore there's nothing but neophytes all over the planet, then it means the whole movement is useless. It means Lord Nityananda's mercy is useless. If it's not eternal, then what is the understanding of Namo Nama Vedanaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Name Gora Tujayi Namaha? If no merciful incarnation can go beyond Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we realize it ain't limited. But we can limit, of course, our ability to receive. At just 6-8 years old or so, he had already memorized and knew the Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya, Charitamrita. Imagine a child, 6, 7, 8 years old, I mean, imagine ourselves at 18 or 80 or whatever, trying to understand all of these scriptures. Not an ordinary life, not an ordinary incarnation into this world. He's born in a Vaishnava family. His grandfather himself, you know, was a Paramahamsa. Fully dedicated, realized agent of Krishna. Now, some special times we see that great souls will even come in even demonic families, like in the case of Bhakti Prahlad. But often we see how an atmosphere is set up for these souls to come that enhances their ability to do the work they have to do on this planet. And so Gogavinda Maharaj, his father died and his mother desired for him to marry. So he married and brought forth family. Became school teacher, but always found ways to preach about Krishna. Was quite a scholar, even whatever he took to was quite scholarly. 45 years old, he left with nothing and went to Vrindavan searching for his guru. 45, he left ready now to fully fulfill what he came into this planet for, which is not just to teach academic education and some spiritual principles, which was not just to maintain the ashram of trying to arrange finances for family. So he did all of those things nicely. But there was some higher purpose to his existence. And that, of course, was to be able to radiate his full love to Krishna without any restrictions, any limitations. And so he wondered, with the understanding that Krishna's mercy is there, fully ready to depend on it in whatever way that it would come. In the early 70s, he was able to come in touch with some Hare Krishna devotees in Vrindavan. They gave him a Back to Godhead magazine. Just by reading that Back to Godhead magazine, Prabhupada speaking some things about Krishna, he became overwhelmed and so desirous to meet this person, understanding that this person was his spiritual master. Was it something that just happened extemporaneously, haphazard, that somehow he just met that devotee and somehow the magazine was impressive? Not really. Was it that it was an accident that he just somehow happened to come to Vrindavan at that time that Srila Prabhupada was arranging for the opening of Krishna Balaram Temple? Was it an accident that they met in Vrindavan? Of course not. The opposite. It's a part of the Lord's arrangement. As his great soldiers meet up to do what is necessary. So when he met Srila Prabhupada in that first meeting asked him if he had taken sannyas yet. He said no. So Prabhupada arranged for his sannyas. So here he's meeting Srila Prabhupada. He hasn't had a chance to become a shiksha, take diksha, hasn't had any opportunity. They meet and there's annoyance. And so he's asking, have you taken sannyas yet? In the spirit that, okay, so you are here. Now has this been done for what we are to do together? He said, no. So then he gave him. Prabhupada later gave him sannyas. And then sent him to back to Orissa. He was born in Orissa, not far from Jagannath Puri. In a very special line, his family were great singers, singers for Lord Jagannath, some of the best singers. Now, when he was sent to Orissa, did he go there with a lot of manpower? Did he go there, or women power? Did he go there with money? Did he go there with so many opportunities of people he knew to do things that were just going to make this happen overnight? No. He lived sometimes in a Tiwala's little place, back area. He lived for a while just in a little rack shack that a construction worker had put together for himself. He just shared it. And he lived in the jungle area where there were scorpions and rattlesnakes and malaria from mosquitoes. It was so intense that year after year, when devotees would go to join him, they would leave. They could not take it. It was just too much. He was famous for eating once a day, working like anything, translating and writing. Very humble. But then when he would come in the Vyasa to come in the temple and speak, he was like Bhakti Siddhanta. He was like a lion. I don't know if some of you maybe were physically around him, or you heard his, you hear his lectures now on the tape. And he's extremely strong. But you see him in person, you talk with him after he's finished speaking, he is so kind of, you know, he's humble in general, but he's like an opposite, like a different person altogether. Because as he is doing his mission for the public, and the Lord is coming through him in such a way. And so this is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the mercy of Bhakti Siddhanta. This is the mercy of Prabhupada. This is the mercy that keeps coming through. That mercy is eternal because it's really coming ultimately from Krishna. And that protection and love that Krishna is extending is just tremendous. As we simplify our lives especially, because Krishna's mercy, it is not biased, it is not sectarian, it is not restricted. Just like I was overwhelmed, you know, this last week, as practically all of you know, I've just come from surgery. And as I was going to surgery and even at the day afterwards, I mean, I was just amazed that devotees all around the world were making prayers, doing pujas, 24-hour kirtans, 24-hour prayers. Some are doing prayer circles, hour after hour, bhajan, to like you did here, Hari Nams. I was just amazed. Special puja done in Mayapur, Abhishek, and pujas in the Sringa days. And God brothers writing me and letting me know, tuning into the time that I was at the operation, making prayers, and then pujas just at that time. And I was just overwhelmed. In some places in Russia and Croatia, you know, whole temples, you know, whole projects, you know, just focusing 1 or 2, 3 days in, you know, prayers and pujas. The Russians are very prayerful, those who become devotees, even more than in many places. Anyway, I was just totally amazed. And so while I was amazed and humbled, I was also very saddened. And I was writing a few people like this. And I was sad because I was thinking, so the majority of devotees do not have such a support system that here Krishna has arranged for so many people to be praying for me, pujas all around the world, so much facility available, some disciples, doctors arranging certain things, even devotees arranging later for my care and ready to even do more. And I was thinking, but how many souls in our own movement would not have such experience? And so I wrote, you know, the other day when my Vyas Puja to Prabhupada, I wrote in that spirit. The deadline was, you know, a day or two ago. And so I wrote my Vyas Puja, existence in so many ways, thanking Prabhupada for so many things, but also thanking him that somehow, that by his mercy, that I could be a part of an institution, a community of devotees, a global community of sadhus, where such experience could be had. But even more important than that, I was making promises to Prabhupada that I must now use this to try to see how to double or triple my own involvement in trying to care for devotees. And I was thinking that in this sort of mindset, that Krishna was already answering some of my prayer by helping to, by allowing a few days before I went to the operation, for us to know that we're going to have a hospice here, you know, here in Vidyanagar. Some of you remember just a few days we were mentioning that there's plans now for establishing a hospice here. Some devotees who have the expert skills, medical skills, and seemingly some funds from Los Angeles that will be made available. And how it should naturally be in the mood, what Srila Prabhupada has wanted for Vidyanagari to be a hospital of the heart. Even though we're here, you know, in the middle of nowhere, practically, it's like here at Sunday Feast, and we have basically just our own, you know, devotees, that we don't have a large congregation coming from other places. We're here, but it's like a world of its own, an atmosphere of its own. And so therefore, it is somewhat protected in that way, that it is isolated in such a way here in Pennsylvania. So I was thanking Srila Prabhupada. But then I was also understanding everything happens by some distinct reason and purpose. So why is it that one thing happens to one person, something else happens to something else, something else happens to some other person? And so I could first understand that it is happening is simply due to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. But then one devotee was writing me and he was saying, well, you know, you've always written and prayed to Prabhupada that whatever is best in his service, let it happen. You've always written in the spirit that today you die and take each day in that way. You always live in the spirit that if it's not Prabhupada's desire, that it should be checked in your life. So, as you know, I years and years would write. And I was having some fun the other day with Ajahn. I was explaining to some of the Harinam Press team, kind of an apologetic way, because I'm really very intense. When people around me close, they see how much I push for different things. And so here, we just finished another book this last week. And already I had given them materials, you know, for another book. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, this must be too much. One marathon, another marathon, you know, a chance to finish reading, and there's something else to do. But then I was kind of sharing something about my nature to try to pacify the situation a little bit. And I explained, sort of intimately, I explained that I never expected to live past 25 years. In my early 20s, where I was living, I anticipated that somehow I thought that, you know, life was about being some kind of martyr, revolutionary martyr. I never expected to live past 25. And so I see so much of my life as like borrowed time. And therefore, I do every day in the spirit like it's my last day. And for years and years, I would write to the Prabhupada in a diary form, and I would write him in the spirit that today is the last day of my life. And so my mood would be looking at what I'm to do that day, how I'm to interact with people, in the spirit that by the time this is all over today, I'm out of here. And I have to come to, you know, account, to be accountable. So when you're thinking, speaking, and writing something, especially writing because it causes you to have to think a little deeper, then it becomes a part of your mindset. So it's kind of a part of my mindset that to do as much as you can and to offer it to Guru as you still have an opportunity. So when I was going for the surgery, I was quite okay if that was my last day on the operation table, and if life, if death was then, that was all right. I was totally okay. And in that spirit, that okay, so perhaps this is what will be the case. And when I started hearing all these people, when I started hearing about all the devotees doing prayers, I concluded that, looks like I'm going to be out of here. You know, I was considering Krishna arranged that I could have this operation on my birthday, on Lord Jananda's appearance day, and on time that devotees would just naturally be thinking of me, especially disciples, on the appearance day of Guru. And I thought, okay, there cannot be a more auspicious time, you know, to leave. So I was considering that this might be the case. But also in that effort, I was thinking, everyone has to go. Doesn't matter who it is. And as the spiritual masters leave, to what degree is their message permanent? To what degree is the message imbibed, accepted by those who they try to touch? And so I was thinking in this way, how we did not so much think and expect Prabhupada to leave when he left. Matter of fact, we thought the opposite. We thought he was going to stay. And, you know, quite a number of devotees did not stay in the movement for a whole year after Prabhupada left. Even some of those who were closely around him. Even in one case, even in, you know, one of the sannyasis didn't last 6 months after Prabhupada left. So, in many cases, the relationship may have been too much based on the physical presence. Or in many cases, relationship was too much based on the external involvement of the spiritual teacher. And so that is not good. That is not healthy. That is not Krishna consciousness. It's kind of, you know, it's a religion, or it could even be a cult. But it's not Krishna consciousness. Because this is what we're talking about, Bhaktisiddhanta Gaura-Kishora and Srila Prabhupada. We're talking about how a message is finding ways to meet up and to keep appearing and going on. And this message is a message that's coming from Krishna. So we have to be more and more aware that everything that we rest on and depend on, you know, physically, all that can change overnight. And will change at different times. Doesn't matter how secure or how much stability there may be there. At some point, all of that is going to change. Now, when Krishna lets it change, that is up to Krishna and up to each person's karma. But it all changes. So the question is, as these kind of things change, what's happening with us? Do we get deeper as we have different experiences? So, the spiritual involvement should constantly go deeper and richer. And so it should be richer that Prabhupada appeared and he did his work. And then when he left, it means that Krishna decided that it was time for him to go. For whatever reason that Krishna arranged. When Gaura Govinda Maharaj left, it was Krishna's arrangement that it was time for him to leave. Nobody expected him to leave. Only indications that he gave was some months back, he explained to some of his disciples that Bhaktisiddhanta had left rather untimely. Krishna had recalled him. And he gave some indication that he spoke how the material world is no place for gentlemen. And he gave clear indication that he was not satisfied by being in the material energy any longer. But that it was up to his deity whatever his outcome would be. So he gave some indication that there was some reflection that he was ready. If it was Krishna's desire, he was more than ready to leave. And so while he is, I had just met with him earlier that day, and he was seemingly fully was present. And then some aspiring disciples were coming into his room to visit with him, and had read his books, never met him, were so overwhelmed, and they were getting now a chance to have his darshan. And they were asking him some questions. He was speaking about Lord Jagannath, about Radha and Krishna, and the separation, and Krishna and Radha coming together again, meeting together, and this idea of Lord Chaitanya coming, and the big eyes of Lord Jagannath. He's speaking about this union in the eyes and the separation. And he's speaking about the separation that naturally was talking about the separation that he was also experiencing by being in the material world. Then the Lord reached out and just took him away. And just while he was speaking, he just went right into a trance, laid on the bed, told the body to chant, and Krishna just took him right away. I was on the same floor, right down the hall from him. I think Bhakti Chuma Maharaj had told me that devotees are worried. They think that Gokavinda Maharaj has left. He went in the room, there he was in the bed, and he was gone. And so, the way he left, the first day of Bhakti Siddhanta in Mayapur Dham, auspicious time, speaking auspiciously, all shows that here a great soul who was a part of Prabhupada's entourage, who had come into this world to facilitate the work of his guru. His guru was gone. He did the work. He planted the seeds necessary, and the environment and situations and his own desire was of such that Krishna just brought him back into the spiritual world. What happened? What normally happens? Some of his disciples, after some short time, some of them felt that they should become gurus. Some of them, after a short time, left his instructions and went to other environments. Some left the movement. Others remained fixed. Others took shelter in other environments. But the important thing was, the message was given, now the opportunity was there. And now the real test. How much one has imbibed the message. So that goes on. Lifetime after lifetime, messenger after messenger. And therefore, it's important that we keep reminding ourselves what Krishna is presenting and grab it deeply, the great gems in the Shastra, and where there's opportunity for association, take advantage of it. But most important, realize that it never has been about just the material stability. Prabhupada came to the West with nothing, you know, a few dollars, a few books, some cereal, and he built up a worldwide movement. And then he left it behind for all of ourselves to do what we could do to facilitate what he was doing based on what Bhaktisiddhanta and what Bhaktivinoda and what even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desired to happen. So we can feel very excited and energized to know that we are all a part of such a mission. But we also have to look closer to see how we can honor it in a deeper way. Just like the other day, I sent a message to one of our devotees, and just kind of explained in simple terms, hopefully loving, that your nature is that you're on your way back here, but better that you not live in the ashram, because Krishna consciousness is a certain standard of lifestyle, and if you're not able to do that standard, then you should not pretend, and therefore you should deal with whatever your desires are and the results of those desires, but understand that this is not Krishna consciousness, and understand that guru is not even supposed to have you as a disciple. If this is what you're going to do, then you do it. You know. In other words, sometimes we kind of think Krishna consciousness is just all rules, we know, atahara payasasa, Pajapa Niya Magraha, Gana Sangha. We know that it's not just rules, but it surely is not about not being accountable and not honoring rules. We are to honor rules because this is what is our identity. Our identity when we take initiation is that we're making certain pledges. Our identity is that we're really saying, now I am for the service of Mahaprabhu, I am for the service of Srila Prabhupada, and therefore I want to be used in such a way. And I want to go beyond just what I can do with my own intelligence, own facilities, and therefore I want to be a revitalized entity who is on his way back to Godhead. So sometimes that means directly assaulting material nature and not giving in to material energy. Always doing the best we can. We always to do the best, whatever our situations are, whatever our ashram. We always to do the best and try to agitate our minds how we can do more. We're not just, you know, this is not the age of living in the Himalayas or going to the cave or the bush. It's not the age for that. Mahaprabhu didn't want that. He wanted every town, every village. So it takes strategy and facility, and it takes arrangements. But even though we are to do all of this, still our minds should be wanting much more than that by letting Krishna work through us for what his desire is. And so, in one sense, I was thinking, Prabhupada is kindly reciprocating, because there is an aspect of myself, Prabhupada's mercy, that has always been in the mood, that whatever you want, Prabhupada, let that happen in my life. Don't let me just work upon my desires. I'll use my intelligence, I'll use my desires to do what I want to do, but don't let that anything happen where it is out too outside of what you want. If I want something that's not what you want, check it, stop it. So it doesn't mean one doesn't try, one doesn't desire, one doesn't organize, but it means ultimately that this is the way the transmission comes through. And so as we become more and more not subjected to mature energy, then the more we become spiritually opulent, spiritually blessed, spiritually rich, spiritually protected. That's what we all really want, ultimately. But our craziness causes us to doubt Krishna's love, because we doubt his love, what he wants to do with us and through us, which will be far greater. It's like the mother for the little child, mother or father is ready to do much more for that child than what the child can do for themselves, because that is the nature of love. It's not an imposition. It's that the power of the mother and the love of the father is that they are ready to do much more than the little child is aware and able to do, if the little child will just make themselves available for the mother and father's love. So this is the nature of surrender, and this is why most entities don't get it, and why Krishna has to come again and again, why he has to send his representatives, and they come and they involve themselves in these worlds, and at some point, you know, they leave. Sometimes they leave even a little early, because the nature of mature energy is that it is so antagonistic toward transcendence. And so what normally happens is when these great transcendental souls come, that they are not understood, and they're even attacked, and sometimes they're, you know, the people try to devastate their message, their mission, and even their bodies. But they go on, they do what they have to do. As tactful as possible, they do what they have to do. So in conclusion, this is a very nice day for us that we can have this chance to reflect on the appearance of the great agents of Krishna, what they do when they come into the world, and how they also disappear. It's a chance to remind us that Krishna is constantly reaching out, but many times we do not reach out to connect. It's a chance to remind us that even today in, you know, 2002 or in the 21st century, even today in modern day, you know, Vaishnavism, that there are these secret agents who are doing a very special work for the Lord. Many, many people were very sad when Gaugamana Maharaj left. Not just because he left, but because they were so harsh or insensitive toward him. And so just as what happens sometimes in material life, when a person leaves the body, many people crying over the casket, but many people were crying because they're crying because they're thinking that they didn't complete what they wanted to do with that person. They should have told the person they loved them. They should have been more sensitive to the relationship. Now they're going to have to be by themselves. The person was covering for them in this and that way. And so most people are sad because of their own selfishness. If this person is gone, how can this person leave me? This is my husband. This is my wife. How could they leave me? And so they're sad, really, mainly because of their own selfishness, more than what has happened. And so some people were very sad. Obviously, Vaishnava just said in general, when one has to leave, different relationships. But in many cases, because it is so easy to often minimize the humility of these great agents of the Lord. Actually, it's almost impossible because, in one sense, only a real pure devotee can know a pure devotee. We can understand from Shastra, we can get some indications, but you really can't really know the level of purity unless there's purity. To the degree that one is pure, then one can understand purity. Purity connected with purity. When Lokanath, when all these great souls, when they were existing in a different environments, when they meet up, when they hear about each other, there was annoyance. Because purity knew purity. And sometimes certain souls had come into the universe with connecting with certain aspects of the same mission, even though they had different ways of service. Even though Raghunath was mainly focused on simplicity and austerity, and Jiva Goswami such a scholar, even though they were so different, but still they were part of the same mission. When they come into this world and in the spiritual world, some similarities. And so there is there's anointing. We can have some indication, you know, based on. I mean, what we really knew that Gorkha Shodas Babaji is such a great soul, who was just living, you know, he was by the latrines and dressing haggardly, and you know, he was illiterate. People really know, you know, work that even other traditions. Jesus, you know, as a carpenter, Muhammad, as a literate. Unless there is also some depth, then there will not be sort of necessary the significant knowing. But that is not such an issue, because a sadhu is supposed to always treat others in a sadhu manner. And so as one is treating, this makes a Vedic culture. Vedic culture is you treat everyone with love and devotion and with care. And part of that is even the guests. Part of that is because, therefore, you're always treating people in the mood of serving Krishna as you treat each person in that particular way. And after all, super soul is there with each person. And so, in one sense, every person is Krishna coming forth, and everyone in their original nature is a pure devotee of the Lord. And so this is why the devotee on the highest level tunes down to the second, because they're seeing everybody as serving Krishna. But then as they tune down, they see some are serving consciously and some unconsciously, and therefore they have some now position to preach, etc. So let us be very find great solace in Prabhupada, what he has given us, what we're connected with, and try to have a little more faith to receive Krishna's mercy by being more in the mindset of being ready to be used by Krishna. And in our own way, making our prayers that we do not just cater to our material desires. That we do not just hang in to our own intelligence, because our intelligence can trick us in so many ways. We want super intelligence. We want that mercy from the Paramatma that's residing within each of us to help us and to direct us beyond our own vision and plan. As we do this, Krishna consciousness becomes more and more exciting. And so there's constant growth and learning experiences, whatever is going on in our lives. It wasn't that Gogavinda Maharaj was in distress when he was living in his clay hut, straw hut. Matter of fact, when Prabhupada once came there to Bhubaneswar at a visit, the devotees arranged for Prabhupada to stay in this, you know, nice guest quarters. And Prabhupada refused. He wanted to also be in this hut with his special disciple, Gogavinda Maharaj. But there's no electricity, no running water, mosquitoes, scorpions and things around. But Prabhupada, he wanted it as a way to show how much he was receiving the service of this great soul. And how, although Prabhupada can receive so much reverence and so much opulence, how he was so detached from it. How his mission was not based on such. Or was he overly identifying with it, but using it in Krishna's service. So if Krishna brings us so much, we use it in his service. He brings us little, we still see how to use it in his service. With same enthusiasm. Because all that's going to change anyway. So these special days are days when we can get special blessings, appearance and disappearances from the personality at hand. So the rest of the day, please continue your prayers to Bhakti Siddhanta, to Gogavinda Maharaj, who's even closer to us, part of our immediate expression of Krishna consciousness. Your uncle, some of us, you know, our God brother. So let us feel energized that Prabhupada has given us this kind of family that we can, you know, be able to, you know, connect with deeper and deeper. Hare Krishna. Any questions or any comments? Anyone here? Richard.
Hello, Maharaj. Thank you for asking. As you were speaking, the theme of purity rang through most of the things that you said. And it got me thinking. I wanted to ask somewhat a controversial question. You remarked that Krishna would not be fair if he wouldn't always, or if he didn't always have someone or some beings here who were pure, who could carry on the mission. What should be our consciousness then concerning those devotees who are downplaying the role of our spiritual masters, saying that people shouldn't take initiation from spiritual masters because spiritual masters here in this kind of a conditioned soul, the comments like that from some of your own God brothers and God sisters?
No problem. People who say there are no real gurus in ISKCON and they have the Ritvic philosophy, or people who have said in the past in Christianity, you know, only Jesus is the only way, and we have people who are now fanatics in other ways when it comes to feeling that Muhammad is the only way, and they're feeling that God's mercy has stopped with Muhammad, has stopped with Jesus, has stopped, you know, with Srila Prabhupada. So if anything, we should feel some sadness that people are wanting to put a limitation on Krishna's mercy. But we should also see it as a chance that why are such people thinking such a way? And in many cases, they're thinking such a way because Krishna's mercy may be coming harder for them to identify and to find. So because of that, then ourselves as gurus and leaders should try to raise our standard, or should try to function in a way that we less and less bewilder the minds of people who will feel that Prabhupada's mercy has just stopped. No question that, I think for myself and in general, no question that we as present-day gurus, we are babies, or we are young, like young students growing and growing and growing. And perhaps some have already grown, or perhaps some of us will grow very soon into full Nithi blossoming. Or perhaps some have already grown, but their full outcoming hasn't taken place yet. When someone who met Gaura Govinda Maharaj when he was a teacher, and he's teaching, you know, academics, that didn't seem to be the mood of someone who was fully Nithi blossom. When people have met Prabhupada, when he was working, you know, as a pharmacist, that one would have considered that that's not the mood of the topmost Nithi sadhu. Where in fact he was topmost sadhu, but also his mission had various aspects to it. I personally think that there are several of my god brothers who are extremely advanced, and time will show as their calling by Prabhupada's mercy shines more on them.
Is basically dealing with day-to-day affairs in the world. We say that we should treat everybody with love, respect, be open, be considerate, and you know. I want to know whether this kind of approach, you know, encouraging familiarity, letting somebody come close because you take them to be open, trusting, and so on, whether that could cause you trouble, you know. Does one keep a distance and then let the relationship build up, or does one take everybody on trust and in the spirit of love that God wants us to? I mean, could that cause problems for you personally?
Well, whether we're talking about Krishna consciousness or Christianity or Buddhism or Islam, in its true sense of all of these theologies, why do we see this unconditional love theme, or love your neighbor, or in Bhagavatam we find that one should not be one's enemy's enemy? It's not that we're being told to be naive, but we're being informed that we should not allow our own consciousness to come down because there's something in the environment that is not healthy. We should not be in the mood of ever thinking that we can't serve the Lord by being loving and kind. Being loving and kind does not mean to let somebody walk over you, abuse you, because being kind is means that you're thinking about the well-being of others. Thinking about the well-being of others is that where there is something that's auspicious, you want to encourage it, or something that's inauspicious, you want to do something lovingly to discourage it. But still, the love is there. This is when you have to chastise, you know, your child, you have to do that lovingly. You have to think, what is the most loving thing I can do? The most loving thing I can do is I restrict my child or I chastise them so that they will understand that this is not to be done. So even though the act may seem to be a restriction, or in some cases it may even be a chastisement or a punishment, you know, or whatever, but it is done because the mindset is, what is the most loving thing I can do for this entity who I have love for? And the loving thing I can do is to do something that can check their activity so that they will not continue this kind of pattern. But the consciousness is all about love of the person. So that is to be there. We're never to stop thinking lovingly towards someone. Even though we may have difficulty with the action or the sin, but still, we have to realize that each person is a child, an agent. Each person is an energy of God. Any other questions?
Maharaj, in the beginning, the question that you posed was why Krishna wants to see devotees engaged in austerities. And in part of your response, you mentioned that Krishna arranges situations for us and for devotees so that we can show our love for him as he meets us halfway in showing his love for us. Can you please elaborate on that?
Yeah, this is asking her question. We should remember that love is not something you turn on and turn off. I love you if. I love you because you do this for me. I love you because we agree to not to talk about each other's real interests. I love you because we agree to pretend about things, and we are good pretenders together, so we are partners because we pretend. I love you because you say nice things. I love you because you do this and you do that. So that's not love. That's some kind of business. Most of our existence in material energy is that it's based on ulterior motivations or ulterior things. It's rare when people can really go deep and they really genuinely care about that person to the point that they're ready to make sacrifices, they're ready to say what they feel is best for the person, even though the person may not like to hear it. So usually it's kind of a business or it's posturing. And so when certain things are removed, the posturing, then there's a chance to see what's really there. And so Krishna does that constantly. He gives and he takes and he arranges this way, that way. And what we see with his pure devotees, that doesn't make a difference. It makes a difference whether, you know, one is being glorified or being considered infamous. That their mood is still there, you know, to serve Krishna. I mean, it didn't matter in these great acharyas. It didn't matter in the great prophets. Although they wanted to do things on a mass scale, but their love was still the same. If Prabhupada would have had 5 disciples, his love would still have been the same in trying to serve his guru. You know, if Jesus would have had 2 disciples, his love, his mission would still have been the same in doing what he had to do. Whether tens of thousands of people would accept him or not, his duty was to try to help them, but it didn't cause him to want to reject the fact that the Father is not fair because the Father has given him something that's, you know, too difficult in such a way. Anyway, it's very simple. We complicate it. It's simple that as we do our best with whatever we have, then Krishna will automatically do the next thing. And whatever our environment is, we do our best in trying to serve the Lord, then it's up to Krishna to do the next. You know, whatever that is to be. But where we don't have faith, then we just get some benefit, and we make some advancement, and maybe the next life make a little more advancement, the next life a little bit more. So full surrender is like fully the little child running into the hands of the mother or father for love. It's not thinking of anything, you know, that's distracting. Child is in anxiety, mother comes in, the child is crying, desperate, and the child just runs in the mother's arms. Child is just so focused. Here is protection, here is love, here is shelter. We're to have that kind of mood toward God. We're just to want to go full speed ahead. Whatever has to be experienced, whatever one has to deal with, all right. Because what is the difficulty for us in one sense? Whatever difficulties one has to undergo in this lifetime to be able to be eternally liberated and free from any difficulty for the rest of eternity is worth it. Whether it's psychological, physical inconvenience, whatever, it's worth it. And this is why every major scripture puts number one love God with all your heart and all your soul. Or as we say, Shivanagati, full surrender. Islam means full surrender to God. This is why all the tenets we constantly see, put nothing before surrendering to the Lord. And it means literally nothing. So we look and think, what are we putting before that? Whatever things we're putting before that, that is idol worship, that is materialism, excessive materialism, that is where, you know, where we cheat ourselves. And this is why the Lord often puts his devotees in many situations, as it shows us that the love still comes. The love is still received, based on whether one is a scholar or not a scholar, whether one is old or young, whether one is in this ashram or that ashram, this varna or that varna, that it doesn't matter. And that's why Krishna himself, when he appears, he is appearing also in so many different different expressions, and even in every species, as a way of reaching out in some way. It shows how the love keeps coming, keeps coming. Any last questions? And I apologize, I just found we had some guests here. I was speaking more directly, you know, on our theology. Usually on Sundays I speak a little more general, because we also record it for the TV audience. But I wasn't speaking so much this day in general, more just distinctly about Bhaktisiddhanta Gokashodas Babaji. But I hope some of the basic things that we discuss will be of interest to you as well. Yes.
Hare Krishna, yes. Maharaj. It's so wonderful to see you. Excellent share. And I want to say Hare Krishna to all the Vaishnavas that pray for you. And also want to make a comment by saying that we can absolutely change this world by prayers. If we can do it for you, we can do it together as a revolution and change the tide and carry through Lord Chaitanya's message to us through chanting Hari's name. Haribol?
Yes, even the material scientists, as a matter of fact, there's been several conferences in the last 7 to 10 years on the power of prayer. And so there's been several conferences internationally as well as here in America on spirituality and health. I see, Radha Damodar. Last year I spoke at one health conference myself in Philadelphia, and I addressed my issue, area was spirituality and health, and I gave many studies. What's shown how prayer helps with the healing process, how prayer has helped with spontaneous, you know, remission, healing, how where there is ongoing prayer, there is less chance for chronic disease, recovery from alcoholism, drug abuse. So there are many scientific studies that show that prayer does have powerful effects. Of course, the more potent the prayer is, the more, of course, the effects are. When you have many people praying together and there's potency, definitely has effect. We say Shravanam, Musbandhanam, prayer is one of the 9 tenets that we embrace as Krishna conscious devotees. But the prayer should, of course, not be fruitative. We should not just pray making a shopping list of what we are asking God to do for us. But the deeper prayer, of course, is always, Thy will be done. And this is the underlining of what we're trying to discuss by talking about our acharyas in such a way. That the prayer should be more in the mood of, Dear Lord, you know what I really need. I know what I want, you know what I need, and you're there. Because you're consistently there, therefore I am putting myself before you. So we want to have this manaseva, this mental worship, in that way of Krishna, you arrange what you think is best. Help me with the understanding if necessary, but what you arrange. As we say like that and mean it, then the more Krishna will interact in our lives in a very, very, very prominent way. Anyone else?
Very much. I wanted to just take a moment to speak a little bit about Parikshit's question in the mood of thanking yourself, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, Guru Govinda Maharaj, for you staying here with us. I don't know how much of the devotees really understand what that means. I think I'm just beginning to understand that a little bit. And I really want to thank you, because I was realizing over the last week that without your guidance, I don't really know if I personally would still be in the ISKCON movement, the Hare Krishna movement.
You understand that's a weakness, though. I hope you understand.
Yes,
that's a weakness.
It is a weakness, and that's why I want to address it, because I want to openly address my weaknesses and to let the devotees know how important it is for myself and for everyone to kind of like rededicate ourselves, because you chose to stay. You didn't have to do that. You could have not done that. But you chose to stay here with us, and there's a reason for that. And one of the reasons I know with my own case is so that I can look more closely at my weaknesses and be more responsible for sharing those weaknesses and moving past them. And so I don't know how sincere I really am, but I just really want to thank you. And I really sincerely mean that. And I think today being such an auspicious day, it's such a wonderful day to be able to say thank you very much. My Guru Maharaj has told me, Swati Tirtha Maharaj, for being here with us. Thank you.
Any other questions? Come. Things are up to Prabhupada. Prabhupada's amazing for. Sometimes we think Prabhupada has gone, but Srila Prabhupada is so actively involved in his movement. And so many things that's happening in the movement is directly under Prabhupada's supervision. And continues to be that way. And from time to time, different devotees will have different dreams that will help to remind them how much Prabhupada is still monitoring and influencing, you know, what actually happens in this Krishna consciousness. And if he's not, then it means that the guru was just his physical body. Since Prabhupada is the founder, this is the founder of this aspect of Krishna's movement, the National Society of Krishna Consciousness. So it's his special offering. So it's a special type of acharyaship. It's a founder acharya. Yes? Anyone else? Okay, please. Yes, late, we should stop now. Good. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Can you speak louder so they can hear you?
The devotees, if they could also keep Madhamalati in their prayers today, I don't know what's happening, but
we can explain. Madhamalati, when she left America to go to the GDC meeting, that she, you know, she collapsed on the plane, and somehow the doctors here had actually misdiagnosed her problem, and so they were treating her for something, stomach issue or something, but she actually had come down, you know, with tuberculosis. A very serious case of it. So they had to bring a wheelchair to take her off the plane in Bombay and then take her directly to the hospital. So she's been quite ill at this time. So we should definitely send out prayers for her.
And it is important, because Krishna is listening. Just like I would like to think that what is for doing that in the case of Sanat Kumar, Bhakti Chris, because operation was, in his case, was successful, and we have a recovery. I want to thank the devotees for doing that. And I would like to welcome all the guests from the State College, the students, also from Cleveland, Mother Adama, the son, James, and daughter Adina, Dr. Zach from England, just flew in yesterday.
Surprised.
He was surprised with a phone call a few days ago. Yeah, I'm coming, he said. I was doubting, but he said, I didn't know, shall I go to the Ireland or Gitanagari? I said, no, you should come to Gitanagari. You should come to Gitanagari. So he's going to stay for a week. And also a family who, Bob and Faye, with their daughter. They're actually people who adopted one of the oxen. Is that true? Krishna, Gopal Krishna. There's an ox, Gopal Krishna. so that the family was actually still supporting the same mom. And you were able to see him today. So.
You able to see the ox today? Okay.
he's doing well? By your judgment.
Right,
he's doing
now.
Well. Well, we are trying our best. So thank you. Thank you for coming. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai.
Okay, just one last announcement. Before I went for the operation, I gave one class about goals, short-term goals, to try to reach that ultimate long-term goal. And I was suggesting that devotees just try to reflect a little more in their own lives, certain things that they want to do with their families and with their life, with their own sadhana, certain plans, so that we can just kind of focus a little more on our own life and what's going on, structure it, and try to harness the mind better. Because if we don't harness the mind more, or we don't plan, then you know Maya will plan for us. Or as you say, Satan will plan for you. So the idea is to keep the mind more active and trying to see different areas of what things you do or want to do based on whatever's happening in your own life. So I have to go back next week to the doctor to see what's going on with the operation, the effects of it. But I was thinking that maybe, since I'm not going to travel now to India, and I'll be in America for a while, if you can write in your own way some of the things that you're looking at as short-term goals, and if you can send it over to me so that I can also participate in praying for you based on your goals of trying to serve and what you're trying to do, you think better in such ways. But also so we can have the wonderful opportunity of just being a little more aware of how to facilitate you. Since the duty is that we want to try to serve you as best as possible, then it's also nice to see that there are different things that you're trying to incorporate more in your life. Just like, for instance, somebody's now trying to see how they can, take a simple thing, somebody's trying to see how they can finish, you know, reading the Bhagavatam, you know, by, you know, the next 5 or 6 months. Or someone is trying to see how they can, you know, make a nice new outfit for the deities, you know, by the next festival. Or someone is trying to now improve on their chanting, and they want to be able to chant, you know, 25 rounds a day. Anyway, different things according to what's happening in your own life. But the idea is that as my duty is to try to facilitate this, the GBC and sannyasi here, and we want to be very personal as we try to see how we can accommodate, assisting you in your devotional life. So you can do that. But more important is just for yourself. As you think more in your mind, as you think more, as you think out better of some of the things that you want to try to do within this year, etc., or the next coming year. So as you like, if you want to, but we're offering that as many as possible, you take some time in the next couple of days, just write out a few things that you want to try to focus more on. And if you desire, email it over to me or send it over to me, you know, by letter and such. The way I can also try to see how to be a better servant. As I mentioned, that when my Vyasa Puja to Prabhupada, that I made a vow to double or at least triple my involvement in trying to serve the devotees. And that means everywhere that I go and such. So in order to do that, it's not just a matter of just saying or thinking it. I have to also strategize to see that it actually happens. So I want to try to do that a lot more. Okay. Yeah. It's confounded, Chada Sri Prabhupada ki. Divine grace to Bhakti Siddhanta Sayasadhiri Kaur Maharaj ki. Divine grace to Guru Govinda Maharaj ki. Vaishnava Kaur ki. Hare Krishna.